we had scheduled on this Martin Luther King Day to talk with Jared Taylor of American Renaissance. Unfortunately, Jared Taylor had to be out of town due to a funeral in the family, or a family friend, I'm not sure. And from American Renaissance, we have Steve Webster filling in for Jared. Good morning, Steve. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing
great.
Happy
Martin Luther King Day.
Well, same to you. Appreciate that. You know, in reality, people do celebrate this holiday, and it's really the only holiday we have for one individual person, is it not?
It is the only official holiday that we currently have for a named individual, one man, a single man, Martin Luther King. We don't have Washington's birthday anymore. We don't have Lincoln's birthday anymore. We have something called President's Day, and we have Martin Luther King Day.
You would think then that the significance of that one man would have to be extraordinary, and that that it would have to be something that basically everyone agreed upon was a great person, and there was a reason for celebrating. But I don't know that there's a consensus for that.
There is not a consensus for that. In fact, at the time that the King holiday was adopted back in 1983, there was a very strong battle in the, particularly in the U.S. Senate, against this. This was a battle that was led by Senator Jesse Helms and Jeff East, both of North Carolina, and some other, you know, conservative senators who believed that we should do what King advised. In other words, we should judge King, who was being set up to have his own national holiday, by the content of his character. And a lot of these people, a lot of these men, a lot of these senators looked at King and they found his character wanting. You know, King was a plagiarist. He was a serial adulterer. He had known associations with communists who were bent on destroying the United States. He had sort of unconventional views about Christianity, even though he used the full sort of moral force of being a Baptist preacher. And he just is not really, I think, the type of person that we want to hold up to this honor. And in addition to this holiday, I mean, King is going to be the fifth person to receive a national monument on the Mall. You have the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, and then you have the new memorial to Franklin Roosevelt, and now either later this year or next year, they'll be breaking ground on the Martin Luther King Monument.
Let's talk about some of these things that you mentioned, Steve. First off, you talk about this, and I've heard this mentioned before about King's plagiarism. How is that proven?
Oh, it's been proven by many scholars who've looked at his writings. You know, he got his PhD from Boston University. Scholars, particularly this fellow named Theodore Pappas, who was a journalist and worked for the Rockefeller Institute, took a look at his dissertation and found that at least a third of it, you know, one third of his 343-page dissertation, used words borrowed, stolen, without attribution from other people. King's papers are on file at Stanford, and scholars there have gone through and they've noted, you know, numerous instances of where he has plagiarized from others.
Why does the national media not bring out things like that?
Well, I don't know. I think it's because, you know, King has this iconic status, and they don't want to do anything to besmirch his reputation. But it's quite clear that if King were white, regardless of what he's done, his PhD would have been taken away from him simply because, again, as I said, one-third of his, you know, more than 100 pages of his dissertation are based on words of other people.
Hmm.
In fact, his plagiarism goes so deep that even some of his most famous things that he said, like his I Have a Dream speech, there's this part in the speech where he says, "From every mountaintop, let freedom ring." Well, that was lifted from a 1952 speech at the Republican Convention.
Very interesting. All right, again, we're talking with Steve Webster, American Renaissance. There's a an article about this that folks can go to and read. Is it just go to amren.com? Is that right?
Yes, yes. The article that we published this month in the January issue is The Unknown Martin Luther King by a PhD scholar out in Washington, Benjamin J. Ryan. And this article is available on our website, amren.com. It's the very first article on the news for Friday the 16th.
All right. And you say Benjamin J.
Benjamin J. Ryan. Now, obviously, that's a pen name because he is working on his PhD, and it got out, if he published this article under his real name, because it's a pretty hard-hitting, controversial article, he would probably suffer some consequences.
you made an accusation also, and I've heard this, about Dr. King's alleged adultery. Was that well known while he was alive?
It was well known to the FBI. You know, the FBI had King under surveillance because of his known associations with various communists. And as part of this sort of routine surveillance that was authorized by Attorney General Bobby Kennedy, the FBI recorded numerous instances of King being unfaithful with his wife. In fact, the night before he was shot, he was engaged in adulterous activity with two different women.
Wow. I had not heard that. Now,
no, it's, you know, there are reams and reams of evidence detailing various aspects of King that the FBI recorded as part of the surveillance program.
And is that made public now?
It is not made public. It's all under judicial seal. The records, the FBI records, the tapes, the transcripts, the film, the recorded phone calls, all of this stuff still exists. It's all being held at the National Archives under judicial seal. Back in 1977, some associates of King had sued the FBI to, I guess, make the stuff go away. And now, you know, we can't see it until 2027. So, you know, what, 19 years?
Yeah.
If we ever see it. And, you know, back when the Senate was considered making this day a holiday, senators were denied access to this information.
Well, then how do you know about it?
Oh, it's well known. I mean, there was a court case about it. Everybody knows. There's a guy who was the assistant director of the FBI. He's talked about this. Back when they were making King Day a holiday, he wrote to Sam Francis. Sam Francis was a historian who worked very, very diligently on this issue, the King holiday. And the quote here is that this guy, Charles Brennan, who was assistant director of the FBI, called this information, he called it muck. He said it was not the FBI's shining hour, that there was no point in wallowing it again. But the point is, the muck is there. It's there in the form of transcripts, recordings, photos, logs. It is there in great quantity. There are volumes of material labeled obscene. And he goes on to say that future historians just will not be able to avoid it.
Mm.
Of course, we won't see it until 2027, if then.
Yeah. But he was, and there's no dispute that he was being investigated by the FBI. And how much irony is it that that Bobby Kennedy, because Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King, it seems like they're kind of held in the same regard by the same people, but yet Kennedy was allowing this investigation of King.
Well, that's true. No, it's very interesting. Jack Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy's brother, who was president at the time, believed in a lot of things that King stood for, and was not a close associate of King, but, you know, they knew each other. Kennedy strongly advised King to get rid of his communist associates. He strongly encouraged King to dump them, and King did not do that. And because some of these people, like Stanley Levison, were very deeply involved with the Communist Party USA, they were on the Soviet payroll, you know, these were, you know, this is 1963, these things were very problematic at the time. And King refused to do that, and that's why Bobby Kennedy authorized the FBI to do the surveillance.
And that's indisputed, his communist connections.
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, there have been people who were saying that, you know, this guy, Stanley Levison, who was the, I guess, the closest white person to King, he was King's best white friend, if I could put it that way. He had ties with the Communist Party USA and the Soviet Union that went way back. You know, he used to have lunch with the KGB station chief in New York.
Well, despite being friends with someone, I mean, is there any reason to believe that King had communist leanings?
Well, he didn't describe himself as a communist. He did privately acknowledge to people that his ideas, social and economic ideas, were influenced by Marxism, but he did not call himself a communist. He sort of was aiming at some sort of middle path between capitalism and communism,
mm-hmm.
sort of nebulous synthesis between the two.
And as far as you talk about how he's a Baptist preacher, right?
But, he was.
But he did not hold dear to the doctrines that we would think that he would.
Well, he had sort of a problematic view about the divinity of Jesus. He wasn't sold on the Trinity, so he questioned a lot of Christian fundamentalism. And in his dissertation, or his it's not his PhD dissertation, but he graduated from Crozer Theological Seminary in Pennsylvania, and some of his writings there do sort of indicate a skepticism that you would not really expect in someone who's going to be a preacher.
I see. Well, even the things that you've said, one thing that we know that Dr. King said in his I Have a Dream speech, where he talked about he dreamed of the day when a man would be judged on the contents of his character and not the color of his skin, it seems to me that we don't do that today. Today, America, and I just heard this either yesterday or this morning, how we're trying to celebrate the accomplishments and inventions of blacks. And I think there was some kind of forum or seminar about where would we be if it wasn't for these black people who invented, and then they're showing all these different inventions and so forth. How is that bringing about unity and judging a man on the contents of his character?
Well, it's not. It sounds to me that that's doing a lot of judging an individual based on the color of his skin. I think it's very interesting when you take a look at what's going to happen tomorrow when we inaugurate Barack Obama, and you sort of compare the way Barack Obama was treated by the media, and you look back and you see the way that King has also sort of become an icon. King was not properly vetted in order to have a national holiday named for him because of all these associations, because of the things that he did, and his questionable character. And I think that this is also something that's true of Obama, in the sense that Obama has not been fully vetted. The media didn't take a hard look at Barack Obama. It didn't ask him questions about his associations. It didn't really delve into his drug use. It didn't delve into some of these other things that he's done.
Mm.
Some of his associations, Bill Harris comes to mind.
Yeah.
So there's this sort of treatment that is analogous between the way the media views King, both then and now, and how the media currently views Obama.
Mm-hmm. When you look at Obama being inaugurated tomorrow, what does that signify as far as racism in America? I mean, can we drop this feeling of guilt that we're all supposed to have as Americans for slavery, and can we drop this label of racism that somehow gets put upon us? I mean, we're the first major industrialized nation to have a black leader. I mean, I would think that that should do away with all that talk.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. In a way, if you take King at face value and you assume that King's motivations were honest, then what you have tomorrow is you do have, in fact, the fulfillment of King's dream. You have the idea that this country, which is still majority white, 67% white, has elected a black man to be president. So in that sense, what King wanted has come to pass. At the same time, though, on the one hand, that they tell us that Barack Obama is a post-racial candidate for a post-racial America, that they're speaking out of the other side of the mouth, where they say, well, of course, racism still exists, and race is still a problem, and race is something that we're going to have to confront. Even though we've moved beyond race, in a sense, it's still with us, and it's still something that we have to confront. Martin Luther King, he wanted us to move beyond skin color, to judge people by the content of their character, sort of a whole person approach. But at the same time, King wanted reparations for slavery.
Mm-hmm.
King wanted quotas. In other words, if a city was 30% black, municipal jobs within that city, private industry jobs within that city, should be 30% black as well. So
mm-hmm.
King was influential in getting a lot of this race-based stuff, quotas, put in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there's any sort of evidence that that Obama is going to step away from that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Obama is going to end affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to get rid of race-based scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the one hand, you have this fulfillment of almost the colorblind ideal that a white society would pick a black man to be president. But at the same time, the question is still out on whether or not Obama will actually be this sort of post-racial candidate that he has sort of styled himself to be.
Very interesting thought. Now, I want to wrap up with this thought. We had 8 years of just vehement hatred for President George W. Bush by members of the left, members of the media. I mean, in my neighborhood, I passed a vehicle that just had some awful things about President Bush on a bumper sticker, and passed it every day for the last about 7 years. Will we be allowed to criticize Obama just as people have criticized Bush for the last 8 years? Is that going to be allowed without being told we're racist?
I don't think so. I think that for the first 100 days, the first few months, Obama is almost immune to criticism, at least political criticism. You know, you're not going to see Republicans standing very strongly against him.
Yeah.
You're not going to see this sort of outpouring of hatred towards Obama anyway, because the people who supported Bush, you know, they're not angry leftists. So they don't have the hatred in their heart that so many on the left had. But no, Obama will get a pass for a long time. The media will do everything that they can to make sure that that this doesn't happen, that they're not going to run critical stories of Obama for a long time.
Yeah.
So Obama will probably not have any sort of criticism unless things really get bad, unless he makes obvious mistakes that the media can't hide,
uh-huh.
In which case he will get the criticism. But it's never going to rise to the level of vitriol that was directed against Bush.
Yeah. All right, Steve Webster with American Renaissance again, amren.com, amren.com, if you want to read that article and other articles there. Steve, thanks a lot. Please pass along our sympathies to Jared Taylor, and we hope to be able to talk to him again sometime.
Very good, Tom. Thank you. I will.